The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal! Wide on the siren! Solo to pick it. Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down your marks!
Oh, she is.
He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst. Big man takes the mark, it's all too much for Leon. Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year. Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we started this, Andy, 11 years ago. Well, actually, no, sorry. 11th season, 10 years ago, we first did this. We're a week shy of our decade since the first show. And yeah, lots changed since then.
Yeah, we've gone from lovable losers to insufferable overdogs, but I wouldn't have wanted to miss a moment of it. I've had the privilege over the last couple of weeks to catch up with a lot of Tigers, and you know, a lot of Tigers right now were both enjoying the women's, but really looking forward to the men's. And I've had multiple conversations where I've said, you know, it's like, being a Richmond supporter is like you can walk up to someone that's like, you know, as you know, Nick, I have an 8-year-old son, and my son can, you know, walk up to someone and basically, do you like lightsabers? I like lightsabers. Fine, let's play. And that's as easy as it is for an 8-year-old. When you walk up to a Richmond supporter and say, do you support Richmond? I support Richmond. And then once you test to know that they know what they're talking about, boom, you're friends, because it's such a unique thing to have supported Richmond over the last years. And you know, to anyone who's gone from the journey of 1982, doesn't matter whether you picked it up in 2010 or in 1983, like I did, it's been an incredible ride.
Mm, it has. Look, I don't know. One of the great things to me about it, you know, we once did a show about 20 minutes after the final siren of a Carlton game, round one, because we were so excited to finally beat Carlton. And we certainly don't get that excited anymore, but it's a great satisfaction that even though we've got these enormous winning streaks against Carlton and Essendon, it never gets old. I still take great joy every single time it happens.
I'm Nick. I've got the type of ticket where today for round one we were getting the barcode. I refreshed my phone about 25 times just checking that whether or not for that moment when I got the barcode. I'm so excited. Like I have got emotional to the point of choking up about thinking about just seeing Dusty, like, kicking towards the punt road end, hearing the crowd rise again. Mm. Like, this has not got old. And, you know, maybe it's partly because we've got a special team, but I never forgot what that Carlton, what 2013 was like. And, long may the streak continue. And one day we will lose to them. It's impossible not to, but I hope that day's still a long way away.
I know. And thankfully, Essendon having to rebuild a team that hasn't won a final for 16 years. That never stops being funny.
Something we know a bit about, in fairness, Nick, but yeah. I'm on board for all of this, and I'll be equally nervous before Dreamtime as well.
We know about that, but you have to be an adult to carry real Richmond trauma, I think. Like children these days, you know, they've got it easy.
Kids these days, indeed. When we were kids, we had to walk uphill both ways in the snow to go to the MCG. They've got it easy these days.
I know. The Witten Oval on a July afternoon did feel a bit that way.
It did. In fairness, Nick, we generally went there to when we were playing Fitzroy because we had a better chance of winning, but let's not dwell on semantics.
No. One of the great... Look, it's a combination of this moment in time with the expansion in the number of outlets covering football, but and of also having a genuinely great team, but the sheer number of Richmond related media products, it's pretty great. I haven't watched the Amazon series, but I watched the Fox series last night. There was a men's practice game on the weekend. There's highlights from the VFL. The women's team have been far more watchable the last couple of weeks. Like, all things are coming up Richmond. We're going to lose on Thursday.
There's just so much contact now. I think we were joking on Twitter with Simon Wallace that, do you remember when, you know, you used to look at top eight predictions and, you know, some hack you've never heard of, some flunky deep in the age football department predicted Richmond to come eighth and, oh, well, you know, look, this is promising because, you know, the 10 other tipsters didn't give us a shot. And now, you know, you sort of, everyone talks about us, even if we're not predicted to win the flag, we're predicted to finish top four. We're just overwhelmed with content. But I'm actually glad you mentioned it, Nick, because I watched One Night in Brisbane 2 days ago too, and I just wanted to share a couple of observations with you. We'll get into the show shortly, but since you brought it up, I wanted to... There's a couple of things, Nick, I loved. Firstly, lots of NFL references. Jack described the Richmond game plan as ground and pound. Really interesting phrase, and what basically meant was his own game is, you know, get the ball, contest, get the aerial ball to the ground, and then we sort of pound it with our fast running mids. And actually, that and the Amazon doc, it's very clear that we think we're the fastest team in the AFL, and we talk about that a lot. Secondly, Dimmer also talked about Ty Law, was New England Patriot, who swept from wide receiver to cornerback, who we all knew about it, but to emphasize his do the job mantra, which is very much a sort of, you can see that, you know, like internalized Richmond's core belief, which is, you know, I think is quite reasonable, is they're not the most talented team, but they're the team that does their jobs the best, and they have their system and the desire of players to fit within the system is the key to their success, which is fascinating. And I have one or two other things, but what stood out to you from the doc, Nick?
Oh, look, I thought that was actually, you say that about Jack and he's saying, oh, it's all about the team, but he's also extremely aware of how many possessions he's got. And he loves kicking a goal. Like, I think there's a...
Yeah, Nick, in fairness, it's not hard to count above one.
That's true, but there's very much a battle within his soul for how he measures his self-worth. You know, on one shoulder there's 21-year-old Jack who's taunting Tom Lynch about having won the Michael Roach Medal last year. And then there's the other that's doing a beautiful tap on to Dusty in the goal square. So it's fascinating.
He's an interesting, just on Jack. There's two things that really stood out to me. It was when he admitted that he was worrying in the Geelong final, is this the end? Which is exactly what an intelligent, I think we were both thinking the same thing, but footballers aren't meant to admit that. And, you know, footballers aren't meant to be sort of self-reflective enough to that to occur to them halfway through a game. Also, the dynamic between him and Dimmer was quite interesting. Do you notice he would pick up and finish Dimmer's sentences quite often? And he was quite effusive when he was asked to describe what Dimmer's good at. Like, you know, it was sort of, you know, to your point exactly about Jack's confidence. Like, you know, when it comes to TV punditry, Jack's the alpha in that or the more experienced, the senior person in that relationship. And he spoke at length and quite perceptively and positively about Dimmer's coaching.
Yeah, I think Jack's easily the hands down favourite of the current group to have a career in media. Like, I mean, Trent Cotchin certainly speaks well, but how many interesting things does he have to say?
There was an AFL. The AFL went round and asked some of the leading players what they'd be doing if they weren't playing footy, and you know, lots of interesting answers. And Brodie Grundy nailed it with saying he'd be a home husband. Brodie Grundy gets 2021 online politics. Trent Cotchin said he'd be a mental wellness coach. So, yes. Okay. Yes, couldn't be a psychologist, could you? I did notice with Jack, he was asked about Dusty, and it felt like there was an interesting answer in there, but it was so deeply buried in his media training and careful language that I didn't actually know what he was saying, which basically means he's perfect for a future career in media.
I did love the, I think it was Jack, mocking Adam Kingsley for trying to teach Dusty something.
Oh, definitely. It was stoppages set up, and you know, Kingsley, full of ideas, been watching tape, turns up, yep. Sorry to rabbit on, Nick, but it was the moment also, you know, in the Amazon documentary where Dimmer's getting his halftime speech and Cotchin's eyes are boring into him, and so is Bolter's. Like it's intimidating to be an AFL senior coach, right? Like, these are extremely, amazingly athletically gifted, very successful men who you're talking to. And, like, you know, you're Adam Kingsley, you turn up, you're full of beans, and you want to help Dusty improve, and then you discover that, maybe that's not your role to tell Dusty what to do.
And, you know, Adam Kingsley, he gets mentioned as a prospective senior coach. He's level 4 accredited. Like, he's a serious figure in the AFL, and, yeah, there's still another level.
Absolutely. Did you have any other takeouts from the documentary?
No, look, it was shocking how little they get to enjoy it. Like, the whole, you know, 2 days later they were having to cut players. I thought that was hard. Like, coaching's a hard job.
Yeah, especially when, like, they're spending all this time talking about the team and the squad and those sort of things. And, you know, I've sort of been thinking about this a bit lately, but having a debate with a friend about the harshness of fan dialogue about what happens internally. But, you know, the reality is many the kid gloves that football clubs put on internally, and partly it's to hide the fact that it's a really brutal industry. You know, people are every week. The best half the team's squad is selected, and half aren't. And then at the end of year, the weakest links are shed. It is a tough, brutal industry.
I know someone like Fraser Turner, whose childhood dream is over at age 20. Yeah, tough gig.
Or Warren Garthwaite, who has to fight against the, you know, it's a really, you know, what he's doing is very emotionally tough because he has to keep training hard at an elite level for what is, you know, an increasingly statistically declining likelihood of a senior career.
Yeah, tough gig. I wanted to talk about, you know, we've had plenty of off-season stuff, but the women have worked their way into their season really nicely. They are substantially improved. I questioned getting Ryan Ferguson in as coach, as sort of, you know, they weren't very creative in their search process. But I think it has worked in terms of bringing a style of play, and of course, having better players makes you a better coach as well, and the team is significantly improved.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, I was, you know, you're normally very positive, and I'm the one who occasionally throws shade, but, you know, and I appreciated that at the time the Ryan Ferguson take was, not the Ryan Ferguson take. It wasn't anti-Ryan Ferguson. It was just pointing out that Bec Goddard was a good candidate. I think in hindsight, that coaching hire looks really good.
Yeah.
He looks, and you know, the independent person, by the way, on that board selection, on that coaching selection, was Katie Palmer, who's now a Richmond board member and impeccable sporting credentials. And I think it shows in the selection. A couple of things I love about the team has purpose, obviously more than it did last year. But it plays the Richmond way, and you know that you can see the Richmond IP coming through, which you didn't last year so much. But I think, look, I mean, as and to your credit, Nick, you pointed this out a lot that, you know, last year we got a bit shafted with the draw, and this year the, you know, the draw's turned for us. We've played two mediocre teams in a row. Well, actually one really poor team and one mediocre team, and we've started, you know, we've really asserted our mid-table respectability, which I think if you look at all our games, they've all been reflective of a team that will probably finish with a percentage of between 80 and 90, which is, you know,
the first half against North was pretty ugly, you know.
It was, but that was the thing that they fought back, didn't they? You know, over the full course of the game, they showed respectability. I was there on the sidelines watching us get monstered. Yeah. Actually, Nick, my biggest takeaway from that is Ellie McKenzie is a beast close up.
Oh, yeah.
Like athletically, you can't see the definition on her leg muscles on the TV, but yeah, up close, she looks amazing. Oh, before I forget, thank you very much to Andrea, who organized the tickets for the game and had a wonderful time on the sidelines. And also humbling when you sit on the sides of an AFLW game, you realize how little you know when you speak to people who really understand. But look, they're fun to watch. Ryan's been a good hire. But Nick, to me, the biggest story is, and it's a pretty basic story, but Katie Brennan is a superstar.
Look, I was going to get to Katie Brennan next. I was actually, so those of us who spent a lifetime trying to perfect drop punts can hang our heads in shame at how good Tessa Levy is at kicking the ball 2 months into her AFL career. I mean, she's literally an Olympic level athlete, but still her skills are just shockingly good, along with, you know, the pace and agility that you'd expect from a high level basketballer. But she's fantastic kicking the ball. It's incredible.
Yeah, actually, there is a bit of a history of that. The players who learn the game late often don't pick up the bad habits that others have. But yeah, like I completely agree, and it was really on show in the Suns. And she's that goal she set up
the Bernardi goal. Yeah, I mean Bernardi.
Is that the
Bernardi took it beautifully? But yeah.
It was amazing. It was beautiful football. And so, like just to get the broader fun, is that, okay, they're not going to make finals, but they're probably going to win this week. They're just a lot of fun to watch.
I know. There is, you know, we've talked about the success stories of the season, and I think that they are quite a few. You know, as you said, Katie Brennan has returned to being an all Australian level star. Mon Conti's continued to play really well. The defence is much stronger with the off-season recruits with Darcy and Cordner. But the flip side, I think we're still carrying a few players who I'm not sure are going to be there when we fully emerge from the rebuild. Like Talia Stahl feels a bit, you know, bush footy legend with limitations. Chut.
I could name a few others, but I don't want to be too harsh on them. But you can see it when we play. But there's clearly some people who have some level of athleticism or high draft picks, but may not be working out. But you can see enough good players that it's obvious in the results, right? You know, they're sort of the we're not the best expansion team, but we're not the worst either. And you know, this week will be interesting against West Coast, but we're definitely on the path to respectability. And provided Courtney Wakefield keeps her body right, we're, you know, there's no sign of us getting worse next year. So Yeah, look, it's fun and it's enjoyable, and this week will be a telling game as well.
Mm. Well, what I liked about the Suns game was like it was a really tough contested game. We were getting monstered in the ruck. Normally, Gabby Seymour's been super competitive, but you know she had Bella from the Gold Coast, who's 12 centimeters taller than she is, and pretty athletic, and that was a lot to deal with. Contested possessions, even overall possession and inside 50s, pretty even. But we just had more class and system, and I think that's a really encouraging sign. And yeah, we should have a pretty big win this week against the Eagles. They're not traveling very well.
No, just on Brennan, there's no AFL ratings in AFLW, and I think they've got rid of the men's as well. Well, I think they've got rid of the men's as well because it's just, explaining to people that a statistic has some use, but it might not capture everything is too hard in football. It's too hard, and it's just easier not to have a rating at all because I can't find the men's one anymore either.
Might be part of Champions Data's attempt to provide no public-facing services whatsoever.
Well, it could be, and Lord knows, the week after, coaches will complain at every fan forum that fans don't get the complexity of the game, and then they're withholding all this information, including salaries, as I've bitched about a million times in this pod. But getting off the point, Katie Brennan, number two in the AFLW in contested marks. Admittedly, she's behind number one by a lot, but top three, I believe, off the top of my head, in meters gained. Top three, I believe, in score involvements, and also I think is it top three in goals. You put those stats together, like that normally puts you number one in the ratings. She's killing it.
Yeah, doing rather nice.
Oh, also,
sorry, you go.
Did I mention contested marks?
Yes, you did. Oh, I think you did.
Oh, apologies. Yes. So contested marks, meters gained, goals, score assists.
Yeah.
Score involvements.
Yeah, it's a pretty solid body of work. And not to mention the she's appearing pretty regularly in the coaches' votes. As well, though they're not out for the Suns game yet. What did you think about the men's practice game on Friday?
Well, I was there. Greatly enjoyed seeing the boys in person.
Your festival of football.
Yes. Greatly enjoyed the company. I think we had a debate offline and in the pod about how meaningful preseason is. Damn it, I think you won this one because I don't think we've learnt very much from preseason. What we've learnt is that Jaden Sherlock is in Superbnik.
Yeah.
Apparently, once again, as like last year, he was in. He was one of the best trainers in the off season. I'll come back to him later, but Jack looks great. We know Dion's training fully, which is great. We've got a very full list. RCD had flashes. I like that he took the game on, but I don't think he's going to push for round one. No.
Third in pressure acts, though. That was certainly took...
Off limited game time?
Yeah, certainly. Took note of that.
I think if you adjust for per minutes, he was probably the clubhouse leader. Yeah, I think the biggest thing was I think Caddy might have taken Marlon's spot on the week.
Yeah, Marlon's... So he's played VFL two of the past 3 weeks. That seems like a thing. Because Jake Arts, if you're thinking, well, Hooley's out of the team, Prestia seems to be fit, Caddy seems to be a lock. So, yeah, I mean... Do you play Bolton more in the midfield and Arts as a forward, or do you have Pickett or not? Like this, yeah, it's It's an interesting discussion.
Yeah, you definitely hear waterfalls falling when Dimmer talks about arts. And like as a coach, you can see why you'd love arts because, you know, even if you don't play him, he puts so much pressure on all your other players that, you know, he's the one where you slack off for a moment. You don't chase hard, you know, for 2 minutes in the third quarter. Well, I've got arts who will. So, you know, he's a great person to have snapping at the heels of the senior team. But, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he played round one.
No. Speaking of people in good shape, Jack looks frisky. Right.
Yeah, roving the ball on the run, I completely agree. Look good against the Pies. And, you know, that Pies game overall, we should acknowledge. We looked really good. We looked solid. One thing I enjoyed was that if you had come down from Mars but had a functional knowledge of AFL but not the characters, and I told you that one ruckman was getting paid half the amount of the other, you wouldn't be able to tell which one it was.
Yeah, I was struck by the, oh, this is the start of the 7-year deal? That's a lot.
Yeah, no. He Grundy had his moments, often against our second ruck. You know, he's too good for Chole in the ruck. Yeah, is that one? Yeah, there's a lot of guys in the AFL who could beat Chole in a centre square hit out who were getting paid less than $1.2 million a year.
I was struck that they played Callum Coleman-Jones in the Tom Lynch role, and I thought he was quite serviceable in that role.
I'm glad you said that. You know, I'm on CCJ Island, on a lot of waterfront property. I wasn't overwhelmed. I was very, very thrilled when he kicked that goal in the last quarter. But I don't think, you know, I'd be shocked if he played round one, for instance. Well, which I'd love it. I love it. You know,
except he's suspended for the first month of the season.
Oh, God. Yeah, of course. Sorry. Anyway, yes, I would be shocked if he played round one. But yeah.
He didn't. If you want to. I'm not. If you were to be so bothered to go back and have another look at an otherwise meaningless game, he doesn't get outmarked very much. And that's. He jumps for the ball, which people can rove off. He's a pretty big target, and he's not hopeless when the ball hits the ground. Like, he is lumbering.
That's true.
He is lumbering when chasing after opposition players, but a lot of that, is he getting outmarked? No, and that's a pretty key skill for our key forwards. I thought it was workable. I thought it was functional at senior level.
Good, thank you. You've cheered me up. Like, I thought he was okay, but I was just hoping for a little bit more. You know, one more good mark. But yeah, he was definitely showed a bit of hope. I think we mentioned this last pod, but, you know, the fact that Will Martin was in the team and he looked quite serviceable, you know, he looks like...
Cracks in.
Like he's going to... Cracks in, going to be a backup, but yeah, I thought he was perfectly respectable in the game. Shorty almost set the all-time record for meters gained during the game. So, you know, as previously mentioned, he's looking very exciting. But overall, it was the team fell away a bit late. You know, when Broad didn't have Grimes.
The team did fall away when we had Nankervis, Cochin, Martin, Grimes on the bench. That is true.
Yes. Well, you know, the system should carry us through. No, I'm not kidding. It was understandable, but look, I think we controlled it. When it was their best versus our best, I think we looked really good.
Camden McIntosh, looking pretty good as well.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't mention it just because he had a superb 2020, but there will be zero discussion about him at Match Committee. They'll just leave the tile up on the board from the grand final. I know it wouldn't actually work like that, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. So finishing off the off season, so we mentioned in our draft show that we had four players training with us. They announced it was about just over a week ago. The players who made the team, firstly Ryan Mansell, who is a sort of Liam Baker type half back pocket from Woodville West Torrens, a premiership team last year, from North Launceston originally. But yeah, he's a very I'll refer back to what I said about him last time, but yeah, he's a fun player. He was my favourite of the train on guys. And the other one who made it was a familiar face, Derek Eglamazy Smith, who's had some decent form in the practice games and apparently has improved his fitness, which the coaches were looking for, which, you know, probably getting someone like Josh Green might have been a more exciting, but I think, you know, he's Eglamazy Smith was the obvious choice if you want somebody who can play some respectable senior footy this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and this is one of your wheelhouses, Nick, that, you know, best not to get too upset about the very last person on the list because you've got some randoms there. Mm. You know, if you were to be, if you want to construct a criticism about, well, should we have had a few more development, high upside development players, you know, you wouldn't necessarily pick on Eggs for that. You might also go to, because, you know, Eggs actually has shown some potential at AFL level. Port game aside, he had actually a Brownlow votes the week before. Mm. You know, the sort of, if you wanted to have a hark on about low upside players, well, maybe you'd talk about Ryan Garthwaite. But yeah, look, I do not have strong takes about Eggs making the list. He had one terrible game, and it was a disaster. Mm. And the club dropped him afterwards and didn't give him a look afterwards. So it's not like this is fans being mean. It was, you know, the club did the same thing. But yeah, maybe he'll get his stuff in order because he's actually played a good game of AFL football, and it's hard to get those guys.
Yeah. Last thing about the sort of the off season news, all the talk about a concussion substitute. Yeah, I think there's pros and cons to it. But a thought for you that if we'd had that in the grand final, then Oleg Markov would be a premiership player right now.
Wow. Hmm. Good stat.
So I think that means we're in favour of it.
Well, you know, anything, you just mention the word substitution and I'm down. Okay. Now, Nick, we discussed offline before we get to Carlton about three hot takes in the preseason. And I just
about about the season as a whole or about the preseason?
Yep, about as Richmond. But you know, at this point in time, what's three hot takes about Richmond? So and using a bit of the preseason information, and they cover a sort of a wide range of topics. You prepared for my first one?
Go for it.
So I'm coming in hot, and this is the biggest one. And the proviso is that, this century, Nick, there's only the team that won the flag the year before has only won the flag the next year five times.
Yep.
So it's a 1 in 4 chance, which is roughly the chances the bookies give us to win the flag this year.
Yep.
You're always more likely to not win the flag than you are. Particularly in preseason,
even if you're the favourite, which we are slightly.
Yes, I have never been more confident of us winning a flag than the start of this year.
Oh, God, I haven't got anything as scaldingly hot as that.
And it's not, and you know, we're the probably our biggest rivals, Port and Geelong,
brought in some
immature.
Talent.
Yep. Yeah, big name players. Probably in Geelong's, well, Cameron's still in his prime, but in Geelong's case, probably it's more reputation than actual output at this stage. But and it's based on a fairly simple metric, Nick, that we have an awful lot of players in their prime, well, sort of the late. Firstly, Nick, I'm going to take you a bit of a journey here. Have you noticed how many greatest of all times there are at the moment in
that's true.
In all different sports?
In world sport, yep.
And a lot of that's not to do with the fact that they were so great in any individual year, but they've had more years of their prime. And sports science is clearly getting better. People are having longer careers. And you could see in the grand final last year that Geelong was one of the oldest teams ever to be playing in the grand final. And they're one of our main rivals. And they've only got older since. We have an awful lot of players that in sort of conventional analysis would be getting near the end or would be ready for a drop-off season. And almost all of them had superb pre-seasons. So I put it to you that like there's no reason, if you believe in the system and you believe in what we're doing, you know, Geelong and Port putting up a few decent players. I mean, we beat Geelong in we beat Port in Port. We beat Geelong on neutral turf. Next year when we've got the G back, and while Jack, while Lynch, while Prestia, and Prestia is back to full training, while Cochin, while Edwards, they're all our plus 30s. Apologies, Lynch is not plus 30. They're all in good nick. I don't see why we shouldn't be very confident.
Ooh, well, my first one is the exact opposite point to that. That I think we are going to have some form of injury crisis during the year, just because we've had them the past couple of years, and we've got a lot of miles on the legs. We've played an extra 12 games over the past 4 years. Hooley's sort of the only one with soft tissue injuries at the moment. But yeah, I just think a team that's getting a bit older, going back to a longer game. I think the injury toll across the whole competition's going to be high, and we're going to have some reasonably funky teams, sides playing, or the players in our team. Like I think we're going to have some Hugo Ralph-Smith action mid-season.
Yeah, actually, I do agree with that. I mean, at some point, and okay, this is the irrationality of all our success coming through, but I've sort of got a supreme level of confidence in Peter Burge to manage this better than the average AFL team.
That's true. And a point in that favour is that we have the confidence to not play Tom Lynch in round one of the finals. That, you know, unlike most teams ever, if a player is 50-50, then there's some doubt about it, we'll normally take the conservative option.
Yeah, and I think lessons have been learned about things like Shane Edwards's end to 2020, where he played so well, being given resting time. And I will go to my second point, which I've changed the order because it continues from yours. I think this year we will see not at least a couple of games of biggie.
Ooh, I like that one.
And not just because Dave might need a resting, or you know, Dave might get injured. Biggie, all the reports are, he's been great in the preseason, and playing him, there could well be games where we play him, Noah, and Asprey, because you know, just watching the grand final, and I know we changed the ruck rotations a bit because of the injuries, but my God, Noah's a beast of the ruck. Like he's bench pressing ruckmen and sending them flying. And I think the coaching staff at one stage, with the infinite calculations they'll have to do, it'll eventually, you know, it'll clunk through to, hey, we'd love to have these three guys playing, as long as Biggie keeps his good form up.
I had that. I didn't quite have that exact thought, but it did strike me on Friday night when Noel Bolter jumped over one of the premier ruckmen in the competition quite easily. That was the thing. My second one is that the first loss we have to a middling team, someone's going to go hard and early on the end of the dynasty call.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, in fairness, Jack has already done that himself. but yeah, like, we are old, and it's going to... Kocher might have a really nasty injury this year. I mean, not, you know, inshallah he won't, but yeah, I can see why people say that. But our resilience and our ability to adapt to change circumstances, and you can make the point, like, Stephen Hawking is... Oh, no, he didn't admit it, but it's in the press today that he changed the rules particularly because he hated the way Trent Kocher mans on the mark. I mean, but they've changed the rules again before to beat us. So, like, this is yes, it's the arrogance of success, but I have so much faith in our ability to be adaptable. And Dimmer just talking about it and in, you know, in 2019, he was so angry about the rule changes, and this year he's... we'll just see how it goes. So I have a lot of faith in our adaptability.
Although when we get to the game preview, one of the things that does always worry me is that round one, game one, is often the worst umpired game of the season, as you get the umpires having to blindly follow the latest Hawking thought bubble without seeing what it actually looks like in a proper game of football.
Yep. Now, Nick, my third hot take is, and this is controversial, but I've been speaking to a number of Richmond people about this, people whose opinion I respect a great deal, and my candidate, because Cochin's making very strong noises that he wants to hang up the captaincy boots after the end of this year. My hot take is that Jaden Short is the ideal next captain.
Ooh, that is
sizzling.
I did not see that one coming.
Okay. Allow me to explain, Nick. And you know, just I'll shoot the clay target in the air. I'll fire it in the air, and you're welcome to shoot it down. All right. So you don't want to appoint a captain who's 30 years or older. One, because they're not going to last long, and two, it's sort of an insult to the younger players. That rules out, for instance, Shane Edwards, who next year will be 33. But, you know, people whose opinion I respect, Conrad Marshall mentioned that he has an enormous amount of respect for Shane Edwards' leadership ability. But so that leads out obvious candidates like Jack, Shane, Dave Asprey is above 30. Dylan Grimes doesn't really, he'll be above 30 next year. And doesn't, you know, Emma Murray has said publicly sort of a few things. He doesn't, you know, isn't necessarily the personality for it. Kane Lambert maybe, but he'll be a 30-year-old mid next year as well. And then you're going down the line. The one that everyone picks is Nick Flostone, but Emma Murray has sort of said things public about him. Like he gets, this is no secret, Emma's said this on podcasts, that, you know, he gets quite anxious before games. So, you know, which is incredible because he seems the most unflappable player, but you know, there you go. But Short will be 26 next year, has been, you know, won the best and fairest last year, won the award for best trainer, apparently had another great hardworking season, could be incredible. This could be an All-Australian this year because of the rule changes, works hard, bubbly personality. Everyone likes him. Doesn't do a lot of media, yes, but there you go. That's my case, Nick.
Ooh, I like that one. If Cochin stepped away right now, I think Dylan Grimes would be ideal. He's under contract for the next 3 years, but I think you're right. If you're stepping down at the end of 2021, we'd have to see. Flossie.
Two other people we didn't mention.
Lynch.
Lynch, who obviously is new to the team, but was a captain previously. But Nick, the big one is Dusty.
That's true. He'd have to do more media. And is that a thing he wants to do?
And look, my reaction to this, if you watched the grand final, I was just, God bless him, my son wanted to rewatch the grand final. Like, Dusty's leadership is so strong in that game. But also, you know, why would you want to mess with the head of the best player in the AFL? Like, you know, what's your upside here?
Yeah. If it's broke, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And hats off to you for some, I know, all the years of brainwashing that have gone into your child making that decision.
Funnily enough, I've watched it so recently with you, actually, because a mutual friend of ours was in quarantine, that I wasn't that into watching it. But, yeah, I just popped my head over and, you know, watched the big goals because I could, you know, I know when they're coming. So, yeah, high fives, that sort of thing. But, yes, thank you. I'm not going to say it's my finest parenting moment, but, you know, it's definitely in the pantheon.
Now, I feel this is a bit shooting a barrel, but I feel we are going to get a triumphant return of Ivan Soldo, and he's going to be just completely jacked from pumping weights for the whole season, that he's going to kill someone in his return game.
Oh, I do like that. Not going to be easy to get a game late because mate will have joined us by then.
Mate.
Yeah, Mate, and we'll just see. But I love that take. I cannot wait for his return. Nick, before we, let's talk about Carlton. I have one final question to ask you.
Okay.
Carlton.
Yes.
How are you feeling?
Oh, nervous. I'm always nervous. I was looking at the results of this game, and they've been remarkably consistent, somewhere between 20 and normally 35 points for about the last five games. So we're always on top, but they're sort of just close enough to make me a bit nervous. And I can't help but think, the betting lines, three goals, they've had a pretty competitive pre-season. They've recruited well, although Williams, one of their big recruits, is out. There's enough to worry about for those of us who are prone to worrying.
Yeah, I must admit, I sort of went through their late round season last year, and it's not that impressive. And okay, their biggest recruit is Saad, but you know Saad was never that good against us.
He's good. I like Saad.
No, Saad's a great player, but I just don't think he damages us as much as he damages other teams. Mm. We have so many guys who can run him down in our forward line.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe it was just the dysfunctionality of Essendon. You know, it's the Dangerfield thing is, do you underrate players who don't play well against you? But, you know, the stats back up. He's a good player. I completely agree. You know, Walsh is obviously has become a superstar.
I don't know about superstar. He's a very good player. Like, of their young players, if I had to take one of them, it'd be Jacob Wiedering. I think he's a genuine...
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, That was his game against Tom Lynch last year was as good as anyone, I think.
Yeah, and look, they're a low possession team. They got better at the contested work. Obviously, they've got the all time bull in there,
who causes us problems.
Yeah, and he was injured for the second half of the year. He was rubbish for Carlton, but he was carrying injuries. He worries, as you say, he worries me, and he'll be too big for our mids, as he always is. But
Pitney is not bad in the ruck. He's a very respectable option.
Yeah, and like nice. Like us, you know, nice path to the AFL. They've invested the right amount of resources in the ruck for years, having over-invested in the position. I don't see their path other than, you know, the typical cop-out of, like, everything going their way with goal-kicking and a few dodgy free kicks. I don't see their path to victory.
Zach Fisher looks better, and he's got a bit of track record behind him. Paddy Dow looked functional during the preseason, which was an enormous step forward for how terrible he was last year.
And sort of undermining your long term desire to have him play for us.
Yeah, there are persistent rumours on the internet of him not being happy in Carlton, which
started by you or by actual other people.
Other people. And Harry McKay, he's a big talented boy. Like they've struggled to put a forward line together, but if McKay's playing well, Jack Silvani played well against the Saints in that sort of third tall forward role. You know, they've got a couple of functional small forwards now. Like, yeah, it's coming together. It's been a long, painful, delicious rebuild. But, yeah, they're getting better.
But, like, Nick, how will they go without their spiritual and on-field leader, McGovern?
Oh, I know. Doherty and Saar does give them two of the better halfback flankers in the competition. Now, is it one of the more important positions in the game? Possibly not. But yeah, bits and pieces of the team are coming together, and it could be a really fast open game on Thursday night, as sort of early rounds often are. And yeah, you know me, I'm habitually pessimistic in these circumstances.
Yeah, so the 18 point line, fair over or unders?
Yeah, I think so. I think given for all the talk that they are, you know, I think we were about a 4-goal favourite this time last year. I think they are a genuinely better team with genuine finals aspirations. But we're pretty settled with, you know, the probably one or two changes from the Premiership team from last time, and you know, and a lot of players looking pretty solid, Nick, in the preseason. So yeah, I'll certainly be nervous and stressed, but yeah, I'll also be chipping us.
Okay, completely agree. I think though, if Prestia, Lynch, and Cochin all play, all of whom have had some lighter training loads, I think we should be 20-point favourites, which is not a big difference, but just basically, if our one change is Cads for Marlon or other positional changes that are not due to injury, other than Hooley, I'm pretty confident. So that's a chance actually. Cads comes in for Marlon, Arts comes in for Hooley, and they rejig the team. But yeah, so I'm pretty confident on that basis. But you know, this may be late. Golden era hubris. Now, Nick, I do have one other serious issue to raise with you.
Yep.
So, obviously, going Thursday night, very excited. You know, as you know, traditionally in the big finals, I've been wearing my retro Tigers jumper with 47 on the back. But as you also know, I own because you gave it to me, a Motorola era jumper with signatures on it. I think the Motorola era is becoming increasingly high cred. And on a reasonably warm Melbourne's afternoon, I'm thinking going the Motorola jumper.
Ooh, nice!
What do you reckon?
I'd support that choice because I mean you'll always, you know, carry Ruckman in your heart, but it's becoming increasingly important. Well, not important, but it's got more social cred to show off the affectations of suffering from a previous time.
Yeah, I think so. It's a nice jumper, fits well. So I think I'll alternate during the year. And definitely, I've got the Shea Bolton Indigenous jumper, which I will pull out at some stage. But I think the Multirola jumper just feels right for round one. Just as a reminder, because we're playing Carlton, of what it used to be like, and never forget.
Well, and also a celebration that as a middle-aged man that you can still fit into your clothes from the mid-zeros.
I can still wear my school football jerseys, but we digress.
It'll be a great night. The idea of bless Rhett Bartlett for coming up with an article about how we unveiled, I think it was in 1921 premiership flag and a new flag showing the tiger as a mascot, which we hadn't done before. Like that sort of research is incredible. But yeah, two flags is pretty special. Once in 100 years special, I reckon.
Can't wait.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal! What a siren! So well taken. Whoa, what about that? A 4-360 in slow motion, just down your marks!
Oh, she is.
He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
The skipper goes and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't.